We're learning Masechet Brachot, and tonight we will try to deal with several problems having to do with Hilchot Birchat HaPerot. Typical problem: I was in Garden Circus this afternoon to buy a few samples of what I need. I only have a third of the specimens or a quarter of the specimens that I will actually need tonight, but at least it's some. But for example, I could have had, I wanted to, I didn't, I resisted, I could have bought dandelion leaves for my salad. Sold in Bread and Circus, $1.89 a package.
I got it in my yard.
You've got it in your yard, right? And first of all, I spend maybe $30 or $40 every year trying to get rid of the dandelion.
On the other hand,
on the other hand, as I say, you can buy it for $1.89 a package at Ben Circus and use it in your salad. So is that to be, what kind of bracha do I make on it? In other words, it's an object which in the main is considered as a weed, but on the other hand, it is sometimes used as a salad green. So since it's sometimes used as a salad green, do I make a boy pui hadama? Or since in the main it's an undesirable weed and I don't keep it at all, then perhaps I should only make a shahako because it doesn't really count as something that is a fruit of the earth. By the way, we have to point out that the word pri in the bracha boy pui hadama has a broader significance. We pointed that out in the first Mishnah. Than the word pri when it's used in Borei Pri Ha'etz. In Borei Pri Ha'etz, the word pri refers specifically to fruit. So, for example, whatever bracha we would make on grape leaves, for instance, if you go into, you can also buy some grape leaves stuffed in Bread and Circus, the grape leaves would certainly not be Borei Pri Ha'etz, because a leaf is not a pri, whereas a corresponding leafy vegetable growing on the ground, you would make a boy pri hadama. So we have to bear in mind that for some reason or other, the word pri, when it refers to pri hadama, means in the broad category the fruit, in the generalized term, like we said, the fruit of the loom or the fruit of your labor. So fruit of the earth, when boy pri hadama means any type of produce, it means produce, it doesn't mean fruit. Whereas in Borei Pri Ha'etz, the word pri is limited to mean fruit. We will have a technical question, however, which we'll come to pretty shortly, as to what the definition of fruit means as far as Borei Pri Ha'etz. I did buy a supply of capers, for example, over there. They're
what's that?
Pass the capers to... You can open one up, and you can even eat one if you're willing to make a Borei Pri Ha'etz. But
I don't like the looks of
them. They're tasty. They're a little salty. The capers that are bought in Bread and Circus are in fact the pickled flower of the caper bush.
Of the
caparis. You've all seen the caper bush. If you've ever been to the Kotel, for example, you'll notice that there's at a certain times of the year there are very beautiful purplish flowers that grow out of the wall with a spindly perennial plant. And in fact, we read about them just last Shabbat, the Tofeha Eviona, that the Evionash will, in that beautiful description of the dying, the process of dying in Kohelet that we read on Shabbat, the phrase is for Tafer Ha'evyona, that it fades, it loses its blossom like the Evyona. The Evyona is another name for the caper bush. So you've seen the caper bush, but here the produce that's used is the flower of the plant rather than the bud of the plant rather than the fruit. Well, we know that the fruit eventually develops out of the bud. So is the flower of the caper bush to be considered as a fruit and therefore have the status of Borei Pri Ha'etz, or is it to be treated like a leaf, which would be a Borei Pri Ha'adama? That's the second question that we have.
What was the first? I lost it.
The first one was for items which are not normally grown for the purpose of, for food purposes.
Dandelions.
Or, for example, I grow some things that aren't weeds, nasturtium, it's a flower, I grow it for the flower. Probably at the end of the season, which is about next week or something, we will collect them and eat the leaves, but they're not primarily grown for leaf purposes. Do I make a bracha of boi pui ha-dama, or do I make a shahakal? Since it's not principally grown as a salad green, but rather it's principally grown as a decorative flower, and the salad green aspect is a secondary, is a side issue, does it count as fruit of the earth, or is it just simply foodstuffs that I create after I picked it, because it's not normally planted for that purpose? Let's take a slightly more complicated question. What about candied orange peel? On Yontif, you sometimes serve candied orange peel. Certainly, you grow the oranges for the juice. And principally, oranges are grown for juice. Secondarily, they're grown for the fruit. And presumably, the vast overwhelming majority of orange peel is disposed of in one form or another as garbage or whatever type of produce. But a small percentage of the orange peel goes into the candy business and ends up in an expensive box of candy. So is the orange peel, when it's consumed as candy, considered as consuming the fruit, and therefore it is boi pui ha'etz, or is it a shahakal? The difference would not be between boi pui ha'etz and boi pui ha'adama, because it's certainly part of the fruit. So either it's consumed as a crop, either the intention for the use is as part of the crop, and therefore it will be boi pui ha'etz, or it's a normal usage, and therefore it would be a shahakal ne'abidvar.
One of the major uses for citrus rinds today is to feed cattle.
For example,
would that be considered a food?
It would not be considered human food stuff. In other words, animal fodder would not be considered normal or
human food.
So therefore, if you had a crop, for instance, whose principal usage was for animal fodder, and we'll come across such, and on occasion is also used for human use, the human person who would use it would make a shahakal ne'abidvar, not a boi pui ha'etz or a boi pui ha'adama, as the case may be. At the other side of the same story, something like pumpkin seeds, where the principal use of the pumpkin is for the flesh or making pumpkin pie or what have you, a secondary use of the seeds, do you make a boi pui ha'adama or don't you? Tosos raises an analogous question on unripe almonds. If you're in Israel, for example, during the early fruiting of the almond, during that season, you get a lot of green almonds which are sold, eaten, you know, with salt. You eat the actual flesh of the fruit. The pit is still soft, and therefore it's eaten as a salty fruit rather than as a nut. But that's not the principal usage. So therefore, would you make a shahakal on that, or would you make a boi pui ha'etz? So these are all kinds of questions that we want to deal with today. Let me say that these questions today only affect us as far as Hilchot Brachot are concerned. In other words, we, in the time of the Gemara, or in Eretz Yisrael, even at the present day, the question of what constitutes a fruit, what constitutes a vegetable, what constitutes a foodstuff, had a whole lot of other halakhic implications that went above and beyond the laws of Brachot. For example, I'll list 7 or 8 of them, but I'm sure I'm not getting all of them. One, for example, is the issue of Kedushat Shvi'it. You're supposed to, after the time of the Bi'ur, you're supposed to eat the fruit of the sabbatical year and consume it by eating it in a normal way. So are you allowed, for example, to eat the orange peels as candied orange peels, or eat them at all, for that matter? A second halacha is the
notion. Why would it be prohibited? I mean,
because you're supposed to eat the food in a normal way. And it's not. Okay.
I mean, if you go into many houses in Yerushalayim and Motzei Shavuot, you'll see large collections of orange rinds or grapefruit rinds being left to dry outside the window because the owners don't know how to deal with them. A second type of halacha where this comes in, which is not relevant today, has to do with the issue of kesef maaser sheni. The second tithe, which occurs on the third and the sixth year, you're supposed to bring the fruit to Jerusalem, but if you're a distance away from the Jerusalem, you can redeem the fruit with money, provided that you take that money into Jerusalem and use it to buy foodstuffs. But you're not allowed to use it to buy things which are not foodstuffs. So, for example, would you be able to use it to buy dandelion leaves for your salad in Jerusalem? Is that considered, since it's not perhaps the normal usage, and the object itself might even be considered a weed, would you be allowed to use it for that purpose? A third halacha is the laws of tumat ochlin. Foodstuff can acquire a state of ritual impurity, can become tamei, and the question is, what is an ochel? What constitutes foodstuff? For example, in that can, you have palm parts. We'll come to the subject of palms, parts of palms, in a moment when we get to it in the Gemara. That's a piece of wood, right? If you left it normally on the tree, it would harden and become part of the palm tree. Nevertheless, some people, when they're still young and tender, cut them down and pickle them. Do they have a status?
Very good.
Well, you never learned Masechet Brachot.
We've met you,
Preppy, mentioned
this a couple years ago.
Right, well.
Never ran into
it.
This is
very good.
But
it tastes good. Yes. So the question is, presumably after these palm hearts are pickled and salted and put into this can, they have the status of ochel.
So
what about before? That was a piece of wood.
Yeah.
In other words, we wouldn't say that a potato is a piece of wood because it hasn't yet been cooked, because a potato is meant to be kept and then cooked and then it will be food. So therefore, a piece of potato, even when it's raw, would have the possibility of becoming tamei with tumat ochlin. But what about a piece of wood like that?
Great trivia question.
The great this whole evening tonight will be devoted to trivia questions, but we just have to get some accumulation. So my job is to sort of to keep you awake during all of these various different technical aspects. But in any event, that's the laws of tumat ochli. A third problem has to do with the laws of maaser itself. We know that, for example, that when the fruit ripens and is brought in from the field, you have to separate maaser. But what constitutes this, at what stage does the fruit ripen? For example, suppose you had some unripe figs or unripe grapes. At what stage and you decided to harvest them in the unripe condition? At what stage do they acquire the status of food and therefore would be liable to maaser, and what stage don't they? A sixth type of halacha is the laws of eruvin. For eruvei tchumim or eruvei chatzerot, you have to use actual. Yeah, for eruvei tchumim, for example, you have to use actual foodstuff, right? Can you use the hearts of palms as foodstuffs for your eruv?
Doesn't have to be cooked.
Doesn't have to be cooked. But it has to be suitable for consumption.
You could eat it raw, you mean?
For instance. You can't use the raw food if you can't eat it raw, but if you can eat it raw, okay. And then finally, we have our problem that we started with, which is the seventh on this list, namely what type of bracha to make. Now, in a sense, we can chicken out these questions, and as far as the laws of brachot are concerned, because we know that in a case of doubt, a shahakol will cover anything, and in a case of doubt, a borei pri ha'adama will cover something that requires a borei pri ha'eid. So, what eventually will happen, of course, is that once two or three different opinions are stated on a particular topic, the more conservative of the later codifiers will just take the easy way out and say, make a shahakal, or take the easy way out and make a bo'i priyadama. So for instance, if it's a little disappointing that we would spend two or three hours discussing all the details and the ramifications of these questions, and as you see, I have a whole pile of Encyclopedia Britannica articles that I hope to go through tonight, so there'll be lots of detail, but it'll be rather disappointing to find that in the end, we'll find the Mishnah Berurah simply saying, well, since the Magen Avraham says it's a bo'i priya eitz, and Eliyahu Rabba says it's a bo'i priya dama, why don't you make a shahakal and or bo'i priya dama and don't take care of it?
So the bo'i priya dama not necessarily satisfy a lot of what I would consider things that came from tree considerations, because the bracha could easily have dropped to a shahakal, and therefore priya dama would not cover it?
No, I mean, if it is a normal form of produce, the typical case, or the case that we will see tonight between Bo'i Pri Hadama and Bo'i Pri Ha'etz, is exactly the issue of the caper. Right? The caper is definitely produce. It's definitely meant for human consumption. It's grown for that purpose. The whole issue is simply whether the fruit is considered, the bud of the flower is considered a fruit or not. So it's going to either be Bo'i Pri Hadama or Bo'i Pri Ha'etz. There's no question that it would not be a shahakal.
But might you not have something that came from a tree, but a Bo'i Priya Dama would not be applicable? In other words, Bo'i Priya Eitz is ruled out.
Bo'i Priya Eitz is ruled out, and if it's not a fruit. So, for example, grape leaves.
Okay.
In the case of grape leaves, the issue is, do you say Bo'i Priya Dama?
Or Shehakol.
And right. The issue there is, again, is this a major or principal usage of a grapevine? Since only a small percentage of the leaves from grapevines are ever actually consumed as grape leaves, then presumably this is a secondary or unimportant usage, and therefore you would make a shahakal instead of...
This is what I mean. The grape dama will not necessarily cover a situation which this product is coming from a tree. That's
no, what I'm saying is that the issue there is the same as the issue with a pumpkin seed or anything else. Namely, is this grown for that purpose? Is this a principal usage, or is this only a minor usage? So therefore, if it's a minor, unimportant usage, it's not cultivated for that purpose, you'd make a shahakal. And if it was cultivated for that purpose, you'd make a bo'i priya dama. You couldn't make a bo'i priya eitz on a grape leaf because it's not a fruit. In the case of the caper, the problem is different. The caper definitely is cultivated for that purpose. It is used as a food, and that is the principal usage. But the technical question there is whether you construe the flower, the bud, as a fruit, since the fruit eventually grows out of the flower, or do you consider it as not being a fruit? Okay, so that's the question. Now, for various reasons, mainly because of Yontif, I have to rely on my printer, so therefore I could not Xerox for you all of these articles in the Encyclopedia Britannica, etc. So you'll have to rely on my reading them correctly. So let's first go through the Gemara in Brachot. So what I propose to do is this. I propose to go through the Gemara in Brachot pretty fast, then spend a lot of time in the Mishnah on Uktzin.
Uktzin?
The last perek of the Mishnayos. So in other words, out of these seven topics, we will discuss the laws of Brachot and we will discuss the laws of Tumat Ochlim. The laws of Tumat Ochlim are not relevant today, and the laws of Brachot, as I say, even if we have strong opinions, they will dissolve into greatest common denominator. Okay, so let's start with the Gemara in Brachot. So this is the top of my first page of the handout. I'll probably read it from the old-fashioned book. Okay? Gufa, right?
Where is it?
The very top of the first page, near the end of the line. Okay?
That's the same page of the reference.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got
it. The first page of my handout. It says Brachot Daf Lamed Vav. Yeah. So this is a little bit before Daf Lamed Vav. It's Daf Lamed Hey Amed Bey is near the bottom in my book, but it's at the very top of the handout. Gufa Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, V'chein Amar of Yitzhak Amar of Yochanan, Shemen zayit mevalchin ala borei pri haetz. That if you drink some olive oil, you make borei pri haetz. In other words, the principle here is that since the main purpose of the olive is for the production of olive oil, even though the olive itself has sort of been mashed down and the oil extracted, nevertheless, we might under ordinary circumstances say for an extract you would make a shahako, but in the case of the oil, since this is the principal usage, you make a borei pri haetz. The Gemara asks, Hechi dami, how could you possibly be able to make a borei pri haetz? If he's drinking straight olive oil, uzuki mazikle. It's harmful. It's not considered as eating any kind of food at all if you just drink olive oil straight out of the can or out of the bottle. Tanya, hashotesh shemen shel truma mashalem et hakeren ve'eino mashalem et hachomesh. That if someone drinks the oil of truma, normally if you consume truma, you have to pay the value of what you consume plus a fine of a fifth. But here, since you didn't derive any actual benefit from it, you pay the damages, but you don't pay the fine. Hasach shemen shel truma mashalem et hakeren u'mashalem et hachomesh. On the other hand, if you used olive oil to rub yourself down with, then you would have to pay the additional fine. Ella, so it can't be talking about a case where a man actually drank olive oil. Ella, the ka'achile al-yidei pot, that you ate it by pouring, using it on your bread. You dipped your bread in olive oil. Ihochi habile pati ka vuhu tafel. Under that circumstance, you know, if you put butter on bread, the butter is just an auxiliary to the bread. And here the olive oil is auxiliary to the bread. Ditnan zeha klal, kolshu ikar v'imot tfeila, mevarech al ha'ikar poteret ha'tfeila. You'd make a motzi lechem in ha'aretz, and you wouldn't make any bracha at all on the oil. Ela, dekashati le adidei anigrom, that you drink it with anigrom. As Rashi points out, anigron and ansigron, or whatever the correct Greek words are, the Sansino has a slight different variant, but since everywhere I see in the book it says anigron, it's some kind of drink. The Gemara says anigron maya da salka, ansigron maya da kulishalki, that anigron is some beverage, some item that's made out of primarily beet juice, with oil and various other things added. And ansigron is a similar thing that's made out of other forms of cooked vegetables, Rashi says.
But this is consumed rather than some form of a gargle?
Well, we'll come to that in a minute. At the moment, the Gemara simply, you should think of this as sort of like ketchup. Right? What's ketchup? It's also some kind of a popular mixture, which at the moment, if you look, I didn't bring ketchup down from the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it used to be made about all different types of ingredients than we have today. But today, if you buy ketchup, it's tomatoes with oil and various other spices, but it's a well-known standard household ingredient. Well, they didn't have ketchup in those days, but they had anigron and ansigron, one made out of beets primarily, and the other made out of other types of vegetables. But you should think of it like maybe a little bit looser than ketchup, not that thick, but basically that type of item. So, but the Gemara then asks, "Im kein habile anigron ikar v'shemen tafel." If this oil is added as an ingredient to the anigron, still it's only an ingredient. It's not the main ingredient. The main ingredient, presumably, is the beet juice. V'tnan zeh akal kol shu ikar v'imot tfeila mevarech al ikar v'telet ha'tfeila. So the Gemara answers, "Hacha b'mayaskinan." The man has a sore throat. The Tanya, Hachoshesh Bigrono, Lo Ya'arenu B'Shemen Tchila B'Shabbat. You're not allowed to gargle with oil on Shabbat if you have a sore throat, because the general principle on Shabbat, you're not allowed to engage in minor medical practices where there's no emergency involved, no serious illness, but just discomfort, one resists. Aval, but indeed you're not allowed to gargle with straight oil. Aval no ten shemen habei l'toch anigron. You can add a large amount of oil to your anigron uvolea, and then gargle and swallow. So you're really interested in using this as a gargle, but you're avoiding the prohibition of Shabbat by drinking it in the form of what used to be like ketchup, but now it's some kind of anigron. Pshita. Obviously, if this is the case, he wants the oil, he's drinking the oil, why not? Mahu v'teim l'kevendu l'rufuah kamachavim l'lo l'varach ala klal. you might think that since, after all, he's only doing this as a fiction to avoid the prohibition of Shabbat, that he's mainly interested in using this as a medicine. He's not interested in using this as a foodstuff. Since, nevertheless, he enjoys swallowing the anigram with the oil in it, the gargle, after the whole event of gargling, therefore he still must make the bracha, and the bracha will be boi pri ha'etz, because in this particular instance, the oil is the principal ingredient. That's his principal intention. Okay? Next.
Is there a connection between anigron or ansigron and garon?
No.
That's done for the
No. If you want, I have somewhere the Sansino. They give some slightly...
No, don't bother.
Give some slightly different Greek word here. Let me see if I can have it.
But purely coincidence, the letters garon of throat.
They read it as aliagaron and oxygaron. I mean, I can't tell you what it is. It's some Greek word which was sort of diverted and changed into Aramaic. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Kimcha b'chiti. What about eating wheat flour? You just take a spoon and dip it into the bag of flour and eat it. Okay, kimcha d'chiti. Rabbi Yehuda omer borei pri ha'adama. Rabbi Yehuda says that you make a borei pri ha'adama. Rabbi Nachman amar sha'kol niya b'dvaro. Since this is certainly not the normal way of consuming flour, then you would not make a borei pri ha'adama, you would make a sha'kol. Omer le'rov ale Rabbi Nachman lo titli galad Rabbi Yehuda. You should not disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you make a borei pri ha'adama. And the Rabbi Yochanan u Shmuel kaimi kavate. That both Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel agree with him. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, v'chein Amar Yitzchak Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shemen zayit mavarech alo borei pri ha'etz. That you make a borei pri ha'etz on olive oil, even though it's been processed. Even though the olives are no longer present and what you have is just a processed oil, nevertheless you make a borei pri ha'etz. Similarly here, even though the wheat has been processed into flour, you should make a borei pri ha'adama and not a shahar. Alma afogav de ishtene b'milta kai. Even though the olive has now been transformed, nevertheless it retains its identity as far as the bracha of borei pri ha'etz is concerned. Hachinami afogav de ishtene b'milta kai. Similarly here, in the case of wheat flour, even though it's changed its form, nevertheless it retains its identity. Mi dami, the Gemara says that they're not similar. Hatam letli iluya yachrina. There, in the case of olive oil, that is indeed the end product. The purpose of growing the olives in the first place was to produce the oil, and this was the end product. Hocha itle inuya achrina bapat. Here the flour is only an intermediate stage in the production of bread. It's not meant to be consumed as it is. V'chi itle inuya achrina lo mabalchina lagoy pri ha'adama ela shahakol v'ha omar abzeo amaratna amar shmoel. One eats a raw gourd or wheat or barley flour, you make a shahakol. My love the chiti borei pri ha'adama, implying that for wheat you make a borei pri ha'adama. Lo the chiti nami shahakol niya b'dvaro. Lishmuunin the chiti v'kol shechein b'sari. People are more likely to eat, I don't know why, but people are more likely to eat wheat flour than barley flour, nevertheless. So therefore the Gemara says you should tell us that wheat flour is a shahakol, and certainly barley flour would be a shahakol. So the Gemara says, Iyash me'inan dachiti, havi amina hanimini dachiti, aval besa'ari lo levarech ale klal. But in the case of barley flour, one doesn't make a brach at all. So the Gemara says, "Umigarami melach v'zamit." What's the difference between this and salt and brine? Sometimes, if a person has a craving for salt, they'll take a pinch of straight salt and eat it, or drink a little bit of pickle juice or brine or what have you. That none al hamelach v'al hazamit omer shakol niya b'dvaro. So certainly, any type of foodstuffs requires at least a shahakol. It's true. No, he says you need to be told that you make a bracha on barley flour. Salta daitech amina, I might have thought, melech v'zamit avir inshi d'sheri l'fume. Occasionally a person might put some salt or brine into his mouth. He has a craving. Aval kimcha b'sari, that eating barley flour, Haril v'kasha l'kukiyani, since it may lead to tapeworms or other types of unpleasant intestinal diseases, lo livrach alei klal, since it's not good for you, you shouldn't make any bracha on it whatsoever. Kamashmalan, kevan de itle hanar minei boi bruchi. Even though it's bad for you to eat all this cholesterol, nevertheless, or whatever bad foods they happen to be, nevertheless, since you enjoy them, you make a bracha, no matter what the doctor says about not consuming them. Art. Kola. That's what's in that can. Palm, hearts of palms. Okay? Rav Yehuda Omer Barei Pri HaAdama. Rabbi Yehuda says that on the hearts of palms you make a bracha b'rei pri ha'adama. Ushmuel amar shehakol niyeh b'dvar. And Shmuel says you make a shehak. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'rei pri ha'adama peirahu. It is, after all, the fruit of the earth. Ushmuel amar shehakol niyeh b'dvar ho'il b'sofo l'haksho. Since if you let this piece of palm tree stay in the tree and grow, it would harden into a piece of wood and be completely inedible under all circumstances. Therefore, it's not grown for the purpose of consuming the actual hearts of palms, and therefore it should be a shahak. Ono le Shmuel Rav Yehuda shinena kavatach mistavwa. You certainly should be right. The hot snow, radishes, so for the hakshot, if you leave radishes in the ground, they will eventually become hardened and inedible. Nevertheless, if you pluck them while they are still soft and edible, you make a barei pri ha'adama. And therefore, similarly, in the case of palm hearts, even though if you let them in the tree, they would harden and become inedible wood, since you've picked them before they've hardened, you should make a b'rei pri ha'adama. So the Gemara says, v'lohi. That's no argument. Snon nati inshi adaiti refugla. People plant radish primarily for the purpose of consuming the tubers, the roots. Some of it, of course, they leave for seed, but mostly it's planted to consume the actual radishes themselves. Dikla. Palm trees, lo nati inchi adaiti dekal. Some palm trees are not normally planted to produce the palm hearts. It's a secondary, minor produce, minor usage, but it's not the principal reason for its being left there. V'chal hechad lo nati inchi adaiti dehachilam avachim alei, v'harei tzlach, the nati inchi adaiti depircha. Capers, which are planted primarily for that product that we have over there, for the actual capers themselves, which are the pickled flowers of the caper bush. Utnan al mine nitzpe, on various forms of produce of the caper bush. Al ha'alin, for the leaves. Al ha'tmarot, on the shoots. Omer barei pri ha'adama, you make a bracha barei pri ha'adama. So I'm reminding you, you've all seen a caper bush. Not knowingly, but you've seen one. If you've been to the Kotel, for example, you see on occasion, if you're there at certain seasons, there's a flower that grows out of a rock, purplish flower with sort of spindly leaves and shoots. That's a caper bush. Okay? And if you let the flower grow, at a later stage you'll see there's a little irregularly shaped fruit, and that's known as the eviona, or that was the flower that's mentioned in Kohelet, in the passage about the description of the process of dying. So you've all seen it, even though you don't remember or recognize it. All right, but in any event, it's certainly true, the Gemara says, how can you say that you shouldn't make a b'rei pri ha'adama on palm hearts, because the palm trees are primarily grown for their fruit and not for producing palm hearts? If that would be the case, then the various other side products of the caper bush should also be a shahak on the abidvaro, because the caper bush is primarily planted for the production of capers, not for the production of the fruits and not for the production of the leaves. Nevertheless, the Gemara says that to eat the leaves or eat the shoots, you make a b'rei pri ha'adama. And to eat the, if you eat the buds, and, or you eat the fruit, you make a borei pri ha'etz, implying that side products still carry the bracha borei pri ha'adama borei pri ha'etz. Alright? So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Tzlaf nati inshi adati deshutka. People do plant of the caper for the purpose of reaping the shoots and the leaves. So it is true that the principal usage may be capers, but the other usages are also important. It's considered as a major usage if it's not the only or the principal usage. Dikla lo mati din shiadati dekoa. And a palm tree are, it's such a minor side usage that people don't plant their palm trees with having in mind that they may be able to harvest some of the hearts of the palms. A person who plants caper bushes has in mind that he's going to reap principally the capers themselves, but also make use of the various other parts of the tree, which is not the case in the palm tree. The Afagav the Kalsei Shmuel Rav Yehuda Hilchatal Kavatei Shmuel. And therefore, the final halacha is that on the hearts of the palms, we do not make a borei pri ha'adama, but rather we make a shahakol ni'avidva. So if you want, later we can open up the can, and you can actually taste it, that the bracha that you will make is a shahakol ni'avidva. I'll
check you out.
Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Now the Gemara goes into a rather lengthy discussion of the caper itself. Amar Yehuda Amarav, Tzlaf Shel Ola. Suppose you had a caper bush which was within the 3 years of planting. The law is, I mean, we've already mentioned it, that within the first 3 years, there's a prohibition against using the fruits of the tree. The question now is, what constitutes the fruits of the tree? There's no prohibition against using the leaves of the tree. What about the capers? In other words, is the caper considered as a fruit, or is it considered as a leaf or a branch? In other words, is the flower considered as a fruit? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Tzlaf Shel Ola B'Chutz La'aretz. If you're in Chutz La'aretz, where the law is Safek Ola L'Hakel, that one follows the lenient opinion, Zoreket Ha'Evyonot, you discard the actual fruit, V'Ochel Et HaKafrisim, but you eat the actual capers. L'Memra De'Evyonot Peri, implying that the Evyonot are considered as fruit, V'Kafrisim Lav Peri, and the capers themselves are not considered as fruit. Implying that since you make a borei pri ha'etz on the capers, which implying that the flowers are considered as part of the fruit, so who amak Rabbi Akiva, Daknan, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Tzlaf, Metaser, Tmarot, Ve'Evyonot, Ve'Kafrisin, Rabbi Akiva, Omer, Eino, Metaser, Ela, Evyonot. The laws of Maaser apply only to the fruit, and not even to the capers. Ela Evyonot Bilvad, Mepnei Shehu Pri. V'Neimah Halacha K'Rabbi Yehuda, K'Rabbi Akiva. If that's the case, he should simply have said that the law is like Rabbi Akiva. Why go into this long roundabout statement about what you do in Chutz La'aretz? I Amar Halacha K'Rabbi Akiva, Havamina Afilu Ba'aretz, Kamashmalan, Kola, make your Ba'aretz Halacha K'moto B'Chutz La'aretz. Aval Ba'aretz lo. Aval Ba'aretz lo. V'Neimah Halacha K'Rabbi Akiva B'Chutz La'aretz, V'Kola, make your Ba'aretz Halacha K'moto B'Chutz La'aretz. Yamahaki, Hava mina hani mi gabi maaser ilan, to the eretz gufa mid rabanan. Aval gabi ola, to the eretz bavetz mid yoraita, emo b'chutz la'aretz nami nigzor, kamashka. Rabino ashkoche l'rar, ma'al barav ashi, the kazorik evyonot v'ka ochil kafrisim. He saw ma'al barav ashi, who did follow this advice, namely discarded the evyonot of ola that ate the capers, omo lai ma'idai toch k'rabi akiva to make kiil. Your opinion is to follow Rabbi Akiva, who has the lenient position, that I did ma'al k'beit shamay b'mekile tvei, d'thnan slaf, beit shamay omim kla'im b'kerem, u'beit hilel omim en kla'im b'kerem. Now we come to a completely separate issue, namely, is the caper bush considered as a tree altogether? In Beit Shammai are implying that perhaps it's considered as a vegetable, as a green, not as a tree, and therefore you would have the prohibition of klayim, of klayi zva'im bekerem. Eilu ve'eilu modim shechayav ba'orla, haguf akashya matzlaf Beit Shammai umim klayim bekerem, alma min yereku, is to be construed as a green, not as a tree. V'hadar tanu le'eilu ve'eilu modim shechayim ba'orla, alma min ilanhu, that is to be considered as a tree, not as a green. Beit Shammai is in doubt as to whether the caper bush is to be construed as an actual tree or to be construed as a perennial plant. Whether the laws of Ola apply at all to a caper are in doubt according to Beit Shammai. Uthman safek ola be'etz Yisrael asur v'asur yamutal v'chutz la'etz Yoreid v'lokeach uvad shelo yurenu lokeit. So Rabbi Akiva v'makom Rabbi Elezer abdinan kabate. Uveit Shammai v'makom Beit Hillel eino mishna. So let's, I want to get onto a separate issue, so let me just skip down a little bit. So near the end of where I've quoted, v'hilchak takamar ba'arashi d'zariket ha'evyonot v'achilat ha'kafrisin. The Gemara says, umidu legabei ol alav peiraninhu. Since, as far as the laws of Ola are concerned, the caper is not considered as a part of the, as a fruit, but rather it's considered just, the flower is not considered as a fruit. Legabei brachot nami lav peroninu, v'rol mavachin alah barei pri ha'etz, ela barei pri ha'adama. So therefore, the conclusion of whoever wrote that last comment, it's probably an additional comment appended by one of the later commentaries, not part of the Gemara, because many Rishonim disagree with this conclusion, but since it is a principal conclusion, and as I say, when in doubt, make a Bore Priya Dhamma rather than a Bore Priya Eitz, the final practical resolution is that the next time you eat capers, if you're eating them in isolation, normally you eat them as part of a salad, and they're not the ikar, but only a tafel. But if you eat them, snack on capers alone, you'll make a bracha of Bore Priya Dhamma, not a bracha of Bore Priya Eitz. Okay. There are other things in the Gemara, but my time is running a little bit shorter than I expected, and I want to cover the next page, which is really technical. If you thought this stuff was technical, now we will get into some really technical stuff, which is the last parak of Mishnayos. So many of you may have learned this just because the siyumim and things of this nature. This is where you will get up to. Okay, so we all have it. My page 3. I did a lot of work on this, as you can see, trying to identify the plants, and we will... How much time do we have? What time is it now? All right, it'll take us at least 40 minutes simply to get through 4 or 5 Mishnayos. So let's try to get through the Perek. Yesh tzrichim hechsher ve'ein tzrichim machshava. I'm always reluctant to learn parts of Masechet Tahara because many times in the past, I remember once I gave a whole year's shiurim in Maseches Kelim, and Izzy Sachs sort of got together with a group of people and came to me once and said, look, we want to learn something practical. So tonight, the rest of the shiur is not going to be practical, but I hope that it might be interesting. The only way it can become interesting is that each one of these individual plants has something special and interesting about it. And sometimes there'll be interesting philological things, and otherwise other interesting things which are peculiar to the Encyclopedia Britannica. But so my job is to make this thing, which is primarily should be boring, which is just a listing of plants, interesting.
It's a wild paper.
Yeah. I don't know what the relation is. Yesh tzrichin hechsher ve'ein tzrichin machshava. We're now studying the laws of tumat ochlim. And in order for an ochel, something which is actual food stuff, to become fit to acquire tumah, it has to come in contact with one of the 7 liquids. There are various liquids which include water. Let's just use water as the typical liquid. If your orange, after you've picked it, becomes wet, with your intention, it falls in, you washed it off, then if it comes in contact with something which can impart tumah to it, it becomes tameh. But an orange which has been picked, which has not been moistened by one of the seven liquids, cannot acquire tumah. But an orange is an orange. It doesn't require any intention on your part to declare that this orange I now declare to be a fruit, the foodstuff. But the Mishnah says, so that's yesh tzrichim hekshir ve'ein tzrichim machshava. That's the typical case. The typical case will be a potato, an orange, a piece of meat, any kind of foodstuff which will require any kind of foodstuff, a piece of bread, and so on, can become tameh because it came in contact with liquid. Machshava vehechsher. On the other hand, there will be certain types of things which only acquire the status of foodstuffs because you have decided to eat them. In other words, they're not normally set aside as food. Typical example would be, for instance, the dandelion leaves that we mentioned before. For most of us, they are weeds which we want to get rid of, but you can go and buy a package in Bread and Circus. And if you buy a package of dandelion leaves in Bread and Circus, it has the status of foodstuff, and if it then comes in contact with liquid, then it can acquire tumah. Machshava v'lo hechsher, there'll be cases in which something can acquire, needs intent to become food, but for one technical reason or another does not require hechsher.